This is the Religious Studies Project. This is Christopher Cotter.
And this is David Robertson.
And you are listening to an interview with Linda Woodhead. Is Britain still a Christian country? Well, is it? Let's find out.
When scholars involved in the social scientific study of religion encounter claims concerning religious identities, whether of states, groups, or individuals, a number of questions immediately spring to mind. UK Prime Minister David Cameron's controversy-inducing statement around Easter 2014 that Britain is, quote, a Christian country, is a perfect example of how an apparently simple statement is actually highly ambiguous and can potentially mask a host of powerful ideological concerns. What does Cameron's statement actually mean? In what sense can a country be Christian? And today, on the Religious Studies Project, we welcome back Professor Linda Woodhead, Professor of the Sociology of Religion at Lancaster University, to discuss the question, is Britain still a Christian country? Which is the topic of her currently ongoing Kroll Lectures at the University of Edinburgh. So first off, Linda, welcome back to the Religious Studies Project.
Thank you very much, Chris.
You were one of our first batch of interviewees, I think number 14 or 15, back in 2012. On the secularisation thesis, so we're very pleased to have you back. And this interview topic will tie quite nicely to that, though sort of telling a different slant on maybe...
It's my take on secularisation.
Absolutely. Yeah. So just before we kick off, I mean, what are the parameters here? I came to your introductory lecture last night for the series, but you know, for the benefit of our listeners, what is Britain, first of all? Why are we even asking this question? And how does one go about answering it? You've got a lot of data, I know, to draw on. So.
Okay, so you're absolutely right in starting off with a quotation from the current Prime Minister, David Cameron, because he has raised a lot of controversy over the past few years by saying on a few different occasions that Britain is a Christian country. And every time he says it, he receives a barrage of public criticism, and that generates a lot of controversy and a lot of stories, which I think is very telling why this keeps getting picked up, because obviously Britain at the moment is in a state of flux, or at least uncertainty, about how to characterise itself. So anyone who says we are X is going to get a very full mailbag, and that's what's happening. Yep. So given that I have done a lot of research on the topic recently and some very extensive national surveys, I thought really it behoved me to try and give a sociologist's answer to the question, and that's what I'm trying to do in these lectures.
Okay. So there are many ways that you could approach this, and I'm really just wanting to probably push a button, because obviously you had to think through, how do you answer that question? What are the dimensions?
Well, dimension is a good word, because I am trying to say there's no one source of data you can look to answer this, because religion is multidimensional. Mm-hmm. So if you're wanting to ascertain whether or not we're Christian, you have to look at behaviours and beliefs and values and institutions and rituals and calendars and a whole plethora of things, which is what I'm trying to do. But you've also got to answer the question. Mm-hmm. It's like an exam. So as well as, you can't just say it's more complex. You've got to look at that whole range of data and then sift it and try to come to some sort of clear answer.
Mm. The question, is Britain still a Christian country, is sort of loaded in the way it's asked. Mm. So that's implying that it was, or mm-hmm. I mean, so what's the, if you could maybe just give us a bit of the history of the UK, like why would Cameron be making these assertions, mm-hmm. And why are we now mm-hmm. sort of reassessing them in a sense?
Yeah, well, it is interesting to ask if we have always been a Christian country. Obviously, we haven't always been a Christian country, and there's a pre-Christian past, which many people are increasingly interested in. But insofar as we have been Britain, i.e. a nation, Christianity has been very integral to the construction of British national identity.
Mm-hmm.
From the first few centuries of Christianity's foundation, it was involved in political struggles, but more, of course, about regional identities then. But the concept of Britain as a unified whole is, as Linda Colley shows, absolutely bound up with a Protestant version of Christianity, a distinctive and particularly Anglican Christianity, which Britain felt gave it this kind of unique status and identity, if not right to take over the rest of the world, because it was part of an imperial identity and rhetoric and strategy as well. So in that sense, I think we were a Christian country, at least in, well, I suppose, of course, from the Reformation, that's a nation-building project too, and certainly in the imperial age, and it's in that sense I assume it. It's not to say that everyone would have been actively practicing Christian. That's a different question.
Because as I was thinking on the way over, I was remembering, I think it was possibly, was it Rodney Stark's Secularisation RIP, where there was a fair bit of discussion about the secularisation thesis, the idea that religion is declining, is built on a premise that back in the day, everyone was super religious.
Right.
So
and that's probably never been... I mean, that's probably never been the case. We do know from the 18th century, we've got some quite good data. We know that church attendance has fluctuated, but it's complex because sometimes it was compulsory or socially compulsory. What can you read from that? We know from the 1851 census that... even then, which was probably the height of church going, some people went twice a day, but even then, church going, it's quite hard to interpret these figures, but it was definitely not a majority. So church attendance has never been a majority identity. And there are some wonderful studies by historians, particularly Sarah Williams's study of Southwark at the end of the 19th, early 20th century, where she was able to dig down into popular material culture, and she finds that ordinary people blended a mixture of Christian and non-Christian, folklorish, derived from the countryside, you might want to call them pagan. People blended a whole mixture of religious resources in practice. We've got very patchy evidence, but I've no doubt, like you, it was actually rather more interesting than everyone being homogenous and orthodoxly Christian.
Absolutely. You've got this question, you want to answer. What kind of data sources are you working with? I'm just for the benefit of the listener, I know that you've got a wide variety of data sources, and large scale and small scale. So just before we get onto the specifics, then.
Yeah, well, I'm very promiscuous in my data sources, so I will use anything that I think is useful in helping to answer the question. So I draw on a lot of in-depth qualitative studies done by myself over a couple of decades, but done by many other people, as well as many people on the British Religion and Society programme, which I directed for the last 7 years. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of studies there, which are informed by what I'm saying. And then I have tried to consolidate a lot of that to get an overview by doing, in the last 12 months, doing a series of large sample population surveys, which I did with YouGov, the polling company, to try and get the overall picture. So to get an extensive picture as well as the in-depth snapshots that we get from the more ethnographic work. So a whole range of things.
Wonderful. And it'll tie in... well, with a number of our previous interviews, we've had Martin Stringer on, we've had Abby Day, and very recently we had Joseph Webster, who had done an ethnography of a small fishing village in the north of Scotland, where there's a very particular form of Brethrenism, which dominates and really speaks against this sort of broad idea that Britain is entirely, secular, non-Christian.
Yeah.
So this ties in quite
well. It ties in well, and of course I'm influenced by Abby and Martin's work.
Absolutely. So you've got a number of points here that you're delivering in these lectures. So maybe you just want to start at the beginning.
Well, do you want to answer the question?
Is Britain still
a Christian country? Yes. There we are. Do you want more? that's really the answer I'm giving. But it's a very qualified yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I argue that we are still culturally Christian, So we're not Christian in every dimension. We are certainly not Christian in terms of church going, which is now down to well below 10%. We are not Christian in our agreement with the church's teachings, the current leaderships. We don't take any authority from them. We're in disagreement with a lot of church teaching at the moment. But people on the whole are indifferent rather than negative towards the churches in their attitudes. There is a block of negativity, and it's growing amongst young people. Nevertheless, there's still a lot of goodwill amongst the churches. So in what sense are we Christian? I think our values are still very much shaped by Christianity, and I will try and show that. In particular, we have a very strong commitment to liberal values and human dignity. So, of course, my argument depends upon you thinking that that has Christian as well as secular roots. Yeah. That's a whole other discussion. We can maybe come back to that.
Absolutely.
But I think we are very Christian still in our values. I think of many of our institutions, we forget how Christian they are, including things like parliamentary democracy. Mm-hmm. But all sorts of voluntary associations, civil life and so on, the building we're sitting in, our built environment, the shape of our countryside, you know, our parish boundaries, our national identity. And it's always interesting asking people who aren't Christian who come to Britain how they perceive it. And if you ask, for example, some of my Muslim friends, they say, well, of course you're Christian. How can't you see how Christian you are? But there's another qualification, too, to my saying we are still, in that sense, culturally Christian. And that is that we are less so with every generation. So the identity of no religion is now a majority amongst under 30s for the first time. So that's a significant shift. So young people are becoming more dissociated from even cultural Christianity. Qualification number one. And qualification number two, when I say cultural Christianity, I think culture today is extremely open. You know, we're open to all sorts of the media and social media. We're open to all sorts of cultural influences. And we combine them in all sorts of interesting and creative and idiosyncratic ways. So even if we are still very influenced by our Christian heritage, that would not be the whole picture.
Mm-hmm.
And people are creating new kinds of ritual, packages of belief, sorts of community, in which the Christian is just one of the resources on which they're drawing.
Absolutely. So let's maybe take, let's say, politically. We know that in the UK, let's say, the bishops are in the House of Lords, and there are, I'm not entirely sure at the moment, where prayers happen. Do they happen before council
before
meetings
parliament.
Anymore?
Do, yes,
before
yes,
parliament,
yes,
that
do.
Kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just if we could maybe just focus on the political dimension for a moment, like how Christian is the UK?
Well, very Christian to the eyes of, say, an American. Extremely Christian, shockingly Christian. We have an establishment of religion. Christianity is particularly strongly embedded in the elites of this country, political, legal, social. You know, it's there in Eton, it's in the public schools, it's in Parliament, it's in the legal profession. So people like David Cameron, to go back to his statement, are very positive towards Christianity because it's absolutely part of their milieu. Even if the numbers of churchgoers decline, the fact that it's so embedded in very powerful positions and the elites means it's not going to just disappear overnight.
But it's embedded in the sense that it's still unusual. Like, when Cameron makes that sort of statement and it provokes a reaction, there's that view that in Britain politicians shouldn't really do religion, wasn't that Tony Blair's spin doctor? Didn't he?
Alistair Campbell told him yes, not to do religion. You can see an interesting shift because Cameron refers back to that and says that's not right. He says it's absolutely right that politicians shouldn't let their personal faith dictate policy, which Tony Blair was also saying. That was really the point there. But it's quite right to speak about your faith. And in fact, our politicians more and more speak about their faith. The leader of the opposition, Ed Miliband, talks about his faith. He says he's secular in his faith. But yeah. he still calls it a faith. So perhaps that's a kind of American influence. You know, people want to know what the commitments of their politicians are, and politicians are increasingly willing to say what they are.
Mm.
And there's a disproportionate number of politicians at the moment who are willing to say they're Christian.
Mm.
And yeah, definitely a sort of American influence there, mm-hmm. where mm-hmm. America is notionally secular in the sense yeah. of separation, but
yeah.
it seems to be so imbued in politics as well. The statements that
we have it mm. you know, by law. I mean, it's there in a way that you're not allowed to in America. Like as you say, having the Church of England have this privileged relationship still, but. What you have to realise if you're not from Britain is that the Church yeah. of England is a very strange beast. You know, it's civil religion, it's a national religion. Mm. And that means that it's actually not pushing, until recently, it's not been putting forward its own very, doesn't have a particular kind of credo. Mm. So if you go to somewhere like Westminster Abbey, which is the heart of civil religion, yeah. right at the heart of the political centre of London, next to the Houses of Parliament, Westminster Abbey welcomes all religions. It has mm. services for all religions. So it is a kind of sacred canopy over multicultural Britain rather than over a particular kind of Protestant belief.
Mm.
So it's transmuting in that way. That's something mm. I'm talking about in these lectures as well. I'm going to be looking at what kind of distinctive version of multiculturalism are we developing here.
Absolutely. Because a thought that I've been having recently is that the British established church model is, you know, almost... You could argue that it's better for multiculturalism in a sense that if there was a sort of official interfaith type policy, well, then that would be sort of relativizing everyone's differences, which isn't mm. what people want. It would be mm. excluding people who aren't religious.
Mm-hmm.
If there was a sort of official, we will just be entirely secular, then that's also denying a religious aspect. So this sort of saying, well, we're going to have an established church, but not expect... full participation, not discriminate.
Right. And you might argue, my colleague Kim Knott argues, that liberal Christianity is rather remarkable amongst all the religions. That, I think there are some examples in Hinduism, but it's mm. one of the few religions that whose ecumenism has broadened. So it is part of the ideal of liberal forms of Protestantism in this country, mm. including Anglicanism, that all people can come to God through their own path. So the religion itself has generated a multicultural understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. So then you could argue in a way that multiculturalism is Christian.
It's got a Christian root.
Yeah.
Amongst others. Yeah.
So we're getting... You know, I'm aware that time is moving on and I'm getting distracted with questions that I want to ask. but... One point that you were making yesterday was about this idea of the evacuation of the middle ground and how that ties into to Britain's Christian identity. Maybe that would be something to get us back on.
Yeah, I mean, that's a major part of my argument in these lectures is that clerical church Christianity has gradually been becoming much more marginal to our lives and our society, and particularly since the 80s, it's been travelling in an increasingly, in religious terms, extremist rather than liberal direction, becoming much more creedal, dogmatic, morally Puritan, and travelling therefore in an opposite direction from where most people have, which is to become more liberal. And therefore... whilst we are culturally Christian, it's not the Christianity of our church leaders. Right. They're in a different place from us. So Christianity, I'm saying, has evacuated the mainstream. It's become a marginal countercultural. Church Christianity has become a marginal countercultural and rather, therefore, hostile and offensive to what it sees as a secular society, whereas most people in the middle who consider themselves either Christian or no religion... with some minority religions, of course, of which Islam's the largest, they have a different set of values, much more liberal set of values, which many of them interpret as religious or Christian.
Yeah. And why would you argue that that has happened?
The flight to the margins.
Yeah, like...
I think there's a whole load of reasons. I think partly it's to do with increasing clericalisation of the churches, creating a clerical caste who are more separate from the laity and mainstream society than they were in the past. I think it's partly to do with the kind of worldwide influence of more conservative forms of religion and alliances with conservatives in other parts of the world, an anti-liberal, non-liberal stance taking over. And I think it's to do with theology and the way that academic theology has also, over the same period, travelled in that direction. And, of course, the largest form of Christianity in the world, Catholic, Roman Catholic Christianity, has pursued exactly the same course in moving from the liberalising tendencies of Vatican II and liberation theology to become increasingly conservative under John Paul II and Benedict.
So we've got a situation there where... Right, we're...
So we've got a disjunction between most Christians and church leaders.
And the official institution.
And some churchgoers and the official institutions. So in a way, I mean, if you're in a way, that's a kind of tragic situation in which the institutions that are meant to hold and support the faith of most people have moved apart from them, leaving people without an institutional home.
So something that everyone will be expecting me to ask, but what about this... the nuns, the no religion category then. Yeah. So we know that census box ticking, you know, we know that that is a very inaccurate way of measuring what might be going on in people's heads or hearts, but there's been a decrease in people ticking a Christian box and an increase in a no religion box over the two census takings in the last decade.
Yep, very striking increase.
So what's going on there, and what does that say to arguments about Britain's Christian identity?
Well, it's very significant, I'm sure. I think it's partly a symptom of what we were just talking about, Chris, which is most people feel alienated from the churches now. And as the churches have become have fought against things which most people believed in and saw as good progressive values, like... allowing remarriage of divorced people, allowing regulated forms of abortion to be legal, like allowing civil partnerships first and now gay marriage. I mean, the church is fighting against all those things, has, I think, increasingly alienated younger people, because each generation is more positive about all those developments than the one that went before. And my surveys do show this really quite striking... amongst young people who are hostile to churches, that's a minority of them, but amongst those who are, the main reason they give is the churches are sexist and homophobic. So that's really coming through clearly. So yes, this is a huge shift, I think, for us as a society, moving from a majority of people identifying on a survey as Christian to not even wanting to give that broad identification anymore. So religion becomes a toxic brand, and even Christian does. It's not something you'd want to be associated with.
So this alienation or indifference, is there an indifference to institutional forms of Christianity?
Overwhelming
as well?
Indifference with a block of negativity. Overwhelmingly, majority don't feel strongly positive or negative towards the church.
Okay. We haven't really touched on belief then.
So let's come to that.
How are things going in terms of belief?
Well, belief's interesting because we still believe in God as a country. You know, a majority of people still believe in God, either with certainty or poorly. So we are not secular in that simple sense of belief. And moreover, I can see this from my surveys. I can see a lot about the no religion people and what they believe and don't believe. Some of them believe in God. Some of them call themselves spiritual. Some practice spiritual things. Atheism is not growing. So atheists, people who identify as being clear there is not a God, account for about a quarter of the population and have done for a long time. And if you look at the age profile, it just is exactly the same as the general demographic. So it's not as if it's particularly popular amongst young people. And if you drill down even further and look at their other beliefs, those who share, I did it on my surveys, I looked at the whole range of beliefs that Richard Dawkins would share or the new atheists would share, including hostility to religion, and that's smaller still. Yeah, it's a small subgroup of atheists it's 13% of atheists, or about 5% of the whole population. And disproportionately male, 60-something percent male, and a lot of older men involved in that. So I think it's got a very specific profile that the old new atheism, because some people are now saying it's old, but that batch of post 9/11, Hitchens, Dawkins, who was it in the States?
Dennett Harris.
Yes, exactly. That's a very, very specific movement that is not growing and is not the majority of atheists, or certainly not of people saying no religion.
Mm.
People often confuse no religion with atheism, but they're very different categories. Mm.
So why are they Christians?
Why are some Christians?
No, so this large no religion bloc, are they Christian?
Oh, well, obviously they're not. I wouldn't say they are, because it's quite wrong to give an identity to someone who doesn't accept it. And they're explicitly saying, no, we're not, because they're given the option of ticking the Christian box and they don't. So we need to respect that. So no, they're not Christian in terms of self-identification, nor in terms of belief. Even if they believe in God, it's probably not the Trinity.
Yeah.
And certainly not the incarnation, Jesus Christ. If they're Christian, it would only be in the sense of sharing some fundamental Christian values, and of course being shaped by, as we're talking about, Christian derived institutions, and possibly being quite open to Christianity, not actively hostile. So it's a very residual kind of Christianity.
Time, as ever, is still moving ever swiftly on. We've been discussing, naturally, this in very Christian terms, but there's a large portion of the population of the United Kingdom who are of, let's say, minority religions. What's their place here? What effect does a declaration of Britain as a Christian country, what effect would that have on those populations? Are they growing? Let's talk.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, we know that we all shape our identities in opposition to things. Mm-hmm. So would Muslims, Buddhists, Hindus, etc. feel worried when they hear Cameron say Britain is a Christian country? Well, we haven't got... I can't answer that from my surveys.
Yeah.
But we know from some studies and anecdotally, and from their leaders, that most are more comfortable with Britain being Christian than with it being secular. Because they feel that the real danger, they feel rightly, to their being able to express their religion comes when you have hardline secular ideologies and governments. So France is a much worse place to be Muslim than this country. And they see that as partly because it hasn't got a secularist constitution. They're probably right about that. Not that the Church of England has been particularly hospitable to other religions, but because the Church of England has used to have an established privileged status, other religions were always able to say, well, look, they've got it, why can't we? So it acted as a way of pulling up the status of other religions. So first, the Jewish community was able to argue for state-funded faith schools, and other faiths have been able to follow suit. So in that sense, it's been quite good to be a Christian country, if you're not a Christian. That might change, and it certainly would change, if Christianity became hostile to other religions. So far, that's not been the dynamic. There is, of course, anti-Islamic tendencies within some forms of popular Christianity, but on the whole, anti-Islamism isn't really identified with Christianity, particularly in this country.
On that note, then, is it significant, and I don't mean to keep drawing this question back to David Cameron, but that statement was made by a Conservative politician, and we see in the UK at the moment there's a rise of, let's say, more right-wing UK nationalism, anti-Europe, etc. How does with Christianity being part of the historical identity of the United Kingdom, is there a connection there, maybe sort of grasping for what do we have as a national identity, or we can't say that it's nothing to do with ethnicity, it's nothing to do with race, nothing to do with politics, oh, we'll clutch for
Well, he could be interpreted like that, but he's very much at pains to make it clear that that's not what he means.
Mm.
So he says in the speech that my title comes from, we have and I have deep Christian values, and they are liberal values, and other faiths share those values, and we are a multicultural society, and that is part of our Christian values. So he's at pains not to be used in the kind of way that you're suggesting, to be anti-multicultural or anti-Islamic. And I think we have to say that he was sincere about that.
Yeah.
But, of course, it can be grasped and used in that kind of a way. We're Christian, therefore, why are we allowing more immigration? Why are we allowing diversity? Mm. Why are we not being tolerant?
Yeah. And as I kicked off the interview, it is a prime example of one of those sort of ambiguous statements which can be used.
Yes, so you might say it's
different
dangerous.
Groups for,
yes, you might say.
But as all, you know, if in politics you make a definitive statement, then that doesn't leave much room for manoeuvre, does it? If your statement can be taken and used in different ways by different groups, then that's almost ideal.
It's interesting, you know, again, compare with the United States. We haven't got a new Christian right in quite that sense. And why don't the more conservative nativist parties, why don't they appeal to Christianity? Because they don't, on the whole. Probably the answer is it's just not popular enough to. It wouldn't help their cause to identify it with Christian values. So they tend to talk about particularly Englishness rather than Christianity.
Absolutely. We've sort of been all over the place around this question, and you've provided a great illustration of just how complex the question is, and how if we take different dimensions and look under the surface, folk who might be quite secular, or, you know, you can trace Christian lines throughout their thought, practice, beliefs. We're going to have to kind of end it there, but just if I've cut short before you got to say any final thought.
My only final thought is to say it is very complex. We are Christian in all sorts of different senses, and non-Christian or no religion in some other ones, and increasingly so. Nevertheless, perhaps to my own surprise, I do have to agree with David Cameron. I think what he said in that speech was accurate. We are still a Christian country, but we need to be very clear the sense in which we affirm that, and we also need to be clear that that might not be the case in future generations because it's changing quickly.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Linda.
Pleasure.
So there you have it, listeners. I was delighted to get to sit down with Linda to record that interview. When I posted the question up online and said that I was interviewing Linda, a couple of our followers, Knut and Owen, that have immediately jumped in going, well, how could you describe it, a country as Christian at all? Does that make any sense? Or Owen, with his geographer mind, saying, well, I'd feel uneasy about labelling any sort of large landmass with a singular religious label. But I think...
We're underestimating Linda, I think, if we assume that she's going to answer the question yes or no.
Yeah. So in that interview, I think we managed to tackle those. And we mentioned in the interview there that was Linda's second interview with us. Her first was on the secularization thesis that you conducted with her back
in
February 2012 or something.
Something like that, yeah.
We've just had a teaching experience using that interview.
Indeed. I set it as the main tutorial reading for the week of lectures I've been giving on the Global Religions course on subject of secularization and, you know, new religions in Europe more generally.
Yeah.
But I think we're talking about writing something about that.
Yeah.
So maybe we should repeat ourselves here. But
indeed. No, it was fun. And I then tutored on the course that David did the lecturing for. Yeah, we seemed to enjoy it. We've got a bit of contextualising to do about what's happening next week, so should we maybe just fire on with that. Next week we aren't going to have a normal podcast, so if you're checking your iTunes or your other podcast reader, don't freak out.
We're going to have a slightly different week. We're going to be putting out a panel that Chris Silver and Tommy Coleman recorded for us at the Society for the Scientific Study of Religion conference in Indianapolis at the end of 2014. And it's a panel that was titled, it was in the program as the Religious Studies Project panel, so it got us a bit of exposure there. The broad theme was on religious experience. So what you'll get, we've got a video and audio of that entire conference panel, which we're going to share with you next week instead of a podcast.
Yeah. So, I mean, you get more material, but we just haven't put it out as a podcast because it's not the usual format.
It's a full sort of 90-minute conference panel. Yeah. So we didn't want to condense it down to half an hour because that would mean cutting out people's presentations. So we're presenting the whole thing, but equally, we didn't want to present a 90-minute podcast of conference presentations instead of our usual thing. So we're looking forward to presenting that, and we've got a response to that as well.
Indeed, the thanks to the SSSR, the Society for the Scientific Study of Religion, for hosting us there, and for and to Tommy and Chris for arranging that. It was a great experience to be featured like that at an American conference, and you know, scientific kind of. Most of our background has been in social science and sociological kind of approaches. So that was nice. But business returns to normal the week after.
Yes, which is an interview that David recorded with Titus Hjelm. Hjelm? Yeah, I did this last time.
Hjelm. It's just Hjelm.
Titus Hjelm.
Yeah.
There we go. That's on social constructionism, which is another returning interviewee. Last time we interviewed him, you interviewed him on Marxist approaches.
Yeah, and this one kind of builds from there, really. I mean, one of the biggest implications of Marx's work, which this is something that Titus highlighted in his first interview, is, you know, the kind of money aspect of it is one thing, but actually perhaps the biggest impact for the social sciences was highlighting that structures of knowledge and structures of society, societal kind of behaviors and patterns are determined by who's in charge. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the idea of the, you know, revolution of the proletariat and stuff is one particular development of that, but so is, you know, the post-structuralist critique, and you have people like Foucault and Bourdieu and Deleuze and these kind of people. So that's kind of where we start, and we talk about what is the impact of that way of seeing the world, the idea that says the things that we know are, to some degree, and we discussed that, social constructs. They're things created by people. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about a Platonic universe anymore where there are things which are out there which we find words for. Rather, the words create the things out there, right? So what does that tell us about religion?
Yeah.
What does that mean for how we go about talking about religion? And, you know, scare quotes will be all over the place there. So, I mean, that kind of critical approach is obviously something that we find particularly interesting. But this is taking that particular aspect of it right down to the basics, and you know, hopefully giving an easier way into what can be a very difficult approach. Mm.
Wonderful. I'm really looking forward to it. so that is in a fortnight. Next week, we've got the panel on the website. And as ever, we are presented in association with the British Association for the Study of Religion.
Find us on Facebook. Find us on Twitter. Find us probably still on Google+ if you look hard
find
enough.
Find us on iTunes and use our Amazon links, .co.uk, .com, and .ca. We've whittered on.
Thanks for listening.